The following program may contain subject matter and language not suitable for all ages. If you are sensitive to true crime details or adult language, perhaps you might want to check out some of our other shows on the network, which are safe for all ages. So with viewer and listener discretion advised, let's get to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. My name is Nicole Mancha, and I am joined by my lovely co-host, Alex Mercado.
What up?
And we are joined by our other lovely co-host and wonderful producer, Mike Mercado.
Yo.
No, see, it's not cool.
Mine was better only than yours. What's going on, good brother?
It's going well.
Yeah.
Going well. Adulting.
Yeah, all adulting. Very fun.
Life.
Lovely, Nicole.
Good, just, you know, making it through.
Sounds lovely.
Sounds like November. Sounds like Christmas is right around the corner, yep. And it's not as joyous the older you get.
I love Christmas.
I do too, but I like Christmas Day.
No.
Everything leading up to it is very stressful.
I love the season. I love getting gifts to give to people and preparing them and putting the thought into it. Like, I love that.
I like giving gifts and getting Christmas Day. Other than that, I don't love shopping for gifts because you're always like,
shopping.
Man, I really hope they like it because I think I like it. Like, you don't buy a gift saying, nah, fuck this person. But then sometimes you're like, nah, that wasn't a great gift.
But I like getting, like, specifically, I take time in every gift that I give someone. It's like I make sure that I take a significant amount of time to put it together or to pick it out or whatever it may be because I feel like that's part of just this Christmas spirit is
well,
like
your gift's coming from the Quickie Mart, by the way.
Oh, I knew that already.
And if you're listening to this, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys all enjoyed your Thanksgiving meal because obviously for those who are looking at me very weird into the studio and not remembering how we record these things, this episode will be released after Thanksgiving.
Right, so it's Christmas.
Oh, it's obviously Christmas season for Nicole. It's been Christmas season since November 1st.
Your tree is up.
That is
yeah, it is.
And it's been up for weeks.
All right, enough bantering. We get into today's subject. Guys, there's nothing better after the holidays if you are full of all that turkey and cranberry sauce and stuffing and football and horrible Bears football on top of it.
Stuffing?
Stuffing.
I like stuffing.
We talk about there's nothing better than Resurrection Mary. And this story is very unique because it has to do a lot with Chicago lore, which when we created Murder, Mysteries, and More, we really went heavy on local lore.
First episode.
Yeah. And I also want to make this a shout out. I went to, when I was in eighth grade, Heritage Middle School had an event every year where they would have little electives that you could do. Everybody had to choose one. And one of the electives was a ghost hunter came into our cafeteria and a bunch of us got to like watch his presentation. And the first story he told us was Resurrection Mary. And we'll get into a little bit of the story of what really seared into my memory.
And he's never been the same since.
And honestly, that is when my ghost hunting days began. So before we get into this episode, I want to give some love to the sources of today's episode.
I did a really good job. I worked really hard on these sources.
Yeah.
You know, really, we really can always count a lot of bucks.
We can always count on you to make sure that you get the love. I want to give a shout out to Meet Resurrection Mary, the Ghost of Archer Avenue by Edward McClellan from the Chicago Reader. Resurrection Mary, the Queen of Chicago's Haunted Archer Avenue,
yes,
from ChicagoHauntings.com. And Resurrection Mary, the Eerie Tale of Chicago's Most Famous Ghost by Elizabeth Tilstra. So why don't we start with the legend. Resurrection Mary, as she is called, was reportedly first sighted in 1939 when a man named Jerry Paulus met a beautiful young blonde woman in a white dress at a local dance hall.
So far, so good. Really digging it.
After dancing together all night, Jerry offered the beautiful stranger a ride home. She directed him down Archer Avenue, stopping in front of Resurrection Cemetery, where she vanished before reaching the front gates. Decades later, tales of encounters with Resurrection Mary continue to surface.
So here's what I thought. So I thought this was a story, but I'm used to it being called like the Lady in White or the Hitchhiker. You know what I mean? Like the variations of this story.
So keep that in mind, good okay. brother. One of the most prominent sightings of this spirit was reported in the Suburban Trib in 1979. Reporter Bill Geist interviewed a man named Ralph for an article titled Cryptic Rider Leaves Taxi Driver with the Willies.
That's a great title.
I love headlines back then. They're so serious now, like 23 dead, 9/11, like so serious. Like these were fun. Like, yeah, someone got haunted and traumatized, but there's some fun in there.
The taxi driver requested that his last name be withheld. Although he stuck by his chilling story, he didn't want people to think he was crazy. Ralph explained that he had picked up a strange young woman in a white dress one evening who had directed him down Archer Avenue. She was mostly silent except to remark that the snows had come early this year. When she abruptly requested that he stop in front of Resurrection Cemetery, Ralph slammed on the brakes. He looked away for only a moment when something happened that made his blood run cold. When I turned, she was gone, vanished, and the door never opened. May the good Lord strike me dead. It never opened.
That's wild. I mean, like, I very much believe in ghosts and spirits and all that kind of thing. It's always weird to me, though, when you have these people who claim to have interacted with them, because they feel like, for the most part, they don't interact. They just want to kind of be on that outskirt of life.
We'll get to that in just a little bit as well. Now, here's kind of the perspective from good old Chicago.
Well, the fact that it snowed early is a very Chicago-esque part of the story. It's like, oh, by the way, it snowed early. Oh, really?
Very on brand.
No way.
Literally snowed on Halloween this year.
What?
So the stories of the girl behind the ghost vary. The most prominent is that Mary, as she came to be called, was out one evening with a boyfriend dancing at the old Henry Ballroom, now the Willowbrook Ballroom. They got into a spat, and unable to stand his company any longer, the young woman stormed out of the ballroom to walk home alone. Not long after departing the dance hall, Mary was struck by a car. The driver fled the scene, leaving her for dead. Mary's parents later found by her body. They dressed her in a white gown and dancing shoes, buried her in Resurrection Cemetery. Very specific clothing for.
I'd be bitter as fuck if I was hit right after a dance.
That would suck. And like, you know what I think is crazy for modern time is how many hit and runs there still are.
Yeah.
I think everyone just assumes there's cameras everywhere. There is a lot of hit and runs still of like not solved right away.
Literally, my friend's car was stolen from in front of her house the other day. And the only reason that they know one of the people is because they happen to catch him, but they have nothing else on the other three people who stole the car.
It's crazy though, right?
Yeah, there was a hit and run for a famous, I wouldn't even say necessarily famous, but a wrestler who was hit by a dumpster truck. And
Jesus.
They haven't stopped. They haven't gotten in the truck and he died. Yeah, he passed away. It's crazy. Hit and runs happen all
Man,
the time.
Man, I thought this was a bit at first. I was like, oh my God, Mike, this is not going well. But that is kind of a crazy story, isn't it?
The young woman's spirit then rose from the grave, wandering the cemetery grounds and haunting her favorite dancing places. Unlike other reported ghosts, it seems that this spirit does not hide from human contact, like Nicole was mentioning. Rather, she seeks it out. The story of Resurrection Mary's death explains other type of strange encounters that people have had with her spirit. Several people traveling down Archer Avenue have made distress phone calls to police claiming to have discovered a young woman's body on the side of the road, seemingly abandoned after a hit-and-run accident. When officers reported to the scene, the body seemed to vanish. The only sign left behind was a dent in the grass in the shape of a human body.
It's so creepy. Like, if you've driven down Archer Avenue, it is one of the creepier stretches of road.
Where is that? What town is that? Is that Willowbrook?
It's on the south side. So you can keep going and like Archer will go through some of like the southern boundary, like by Ogden and stuff. But it really depends on where you're at.
Okay, I got you now. I was trying to figure that out from the beginning because, you know, I'm terrible with directions, being, you know, a good old suburb boy my whole life.
So it's really important in this story to also remember one thing. While Mary is the main character, what is the first thing in this title? Resurrection. Resurrection Cemetery is a huge part. Another chilling aspect of this local legend involves the cemetery. Resurrection Cemetery encompasses over 540 acres, making it among some of the largest and possibly most haunted cemeteries in all of North America. One night, a man reported seeing a young woman who looked like she was locked in the vast cemetery. When the police officer went to go check out the scene, he didn't see anyone there. However, the bars on the gate of the cemetery looked scorched and warped. Although authorities chalked it up to a maintenance accident with a truck, legend has it that Resurrection Mary seared the bars with her hands when she grasped them as if trying to free herself. Now, remember when I told you the first ghost story I heard when that expert came in my middle school and showed us a picture?
Yeah.
This was the picture. There's a picture of Resurrection Mary's gates with the sears in them, and it was actually on Fox News. It was a big thing in the early 90s. We haven't heard a lot about it since, but it was a running gag that went along in the 90s.
I guess it depends on what you believe about ghosts, because they were probably iron, and in theory, they can't touch iron.
So, there's a lot of theories on who is Mary. Let's go into the local legends first. Over the years, many researchers have attempted to pin the ghost's identity on young women named Mary that were killed in automotive accidents in the late 20s and early 30s. One theory proposes that the disturbed spirit is Mary Brugvi, a 21-year-old woman who was killed in 1934 when the driver of the vehicle she was riding in crashed into a structure on the side of the road. Another possibility is that Resurrection Mary is the ghost of Anna Norcus, whose devotion to the Virgin Mary led her to adopt Miraja, Lithuanian for Mary, as her middle name. Norcus was killed in an automobile accident in 1927 on her way home from an evening spent at the O. Henry Ballroom. However, Mary was a brunette and Anna was just shy of 13 years old, neither matching the description of a blonde in her early 20s. They also weren't involved in hits and run accidents, leaving the identity of Resurrection Mary a mystery.
That's so funny, like the way we told that even just now. It reminds me a lot of Netflix, where it's like, we're going to do 2 episodes about these dogs sniffing. They get DNA everywhere. And you get to the very end, you're like, well, the dogs were, you know, contaminated and, you know, it really didn't work all the way. So none of it was really true.
Like, we're giving you all these possibilities and then being like, but just kidding. It can't really be possible.
Neither of them really work out. But that's so funny to me. Like, that's how true crime is, though, where it's like you have to, like, in the middle of it, kind of find out, do I believe this? Do I not? And then make your decision by the end.
So over the years, people have dug really deep into this. Let's break down our 2 most famous, let's just say, profiles of what or who could be Resurrection Mary.
Bloody Mary, duh.
Obviously.
They're both named Mary and both ghosts.
Some researchers speculate that this mystery woman heads among thousands at Resurrection Cemetery, that of a young Polish woman, Mary Brugvi. Records indicate that Mary was killed in a car accident in 1934, allegedly on her way home from a dance at the O. Henry. But attempts to link this Mary with the resurrection legend have yielded far less than satisfactory results in the community. There's a lot of us. A close friend of Mary discovered in the mid-1980s that her late girlfriend's name was being connected with the famous Phantom. She went on to describe the fateful day of the accident to an eager reporter. According to Vern Rakowski, man, this is such a Chicago story.
I like it.
Who was interviewed by the Southtown Economist on January 22nd, 1984. The 2 young women had planned to go shopping on March 10th, 1934, near 47th Street and Ashland Avenue. The girls accepted a ride to the popular shopping district from 2 young men who Mary had met. But Rakowski became irritated with the young men, who she remembered as wild boys. The late girls left the men's car while still some distance from their destination, but not before Brugvi made a date for that night. On their way home, Brugvi criticized Rakowski's unfriendliness and her disapproval of Mary's taste in men. Seriously, this is such a cockblock friend. At every step she has, she's like, don't go out with this guy. Don't go out with this loser.
I'm more impressed that whenever we do episodes with, you know, foreign names, you know, none of the sign Nicole, it's not going very well. But the fact that it's Chicago based, Mike is like nailing all these names because you hear all these names on a daily basis.
My name is Bill Squirsky, and you're listening to the Superfans.
Like, you're just flying through these names now.
Nonetheless, Rakowski continued to express her dislike of their latest escorts and cautioned Bregvi about their plans for that night. Determined to keep her date, Mary left her girlfriend for the day and went home to 4611 South Darnan Avenue. Rakowski stayed home that Saturday night, of course she did, and was awakened the next morning by her mother, who informed Rakowski that Mary had been killed in a car accident in the Loop sometime during the evening.
So obviously she wasn't that dumb for thinking that she shouldn't have been hanging out with them.
I don't know. I watch enough horror movies to know the people who die have the most fun.
I watch enough Full House to know when Stephanie didn't get in the car, she did not get involved with the accident with those punk teenagers.
Exactly.
So, you know, Full House doesn't lie.
Family matters greater than Full House. Bregby's parents would learn that although their daughter had been sitting in the back seat before the time of the accident, she was persuaded by her girlfriends to switch seats, since the latter was not getting along with the driver. All right, so maybe these guys were douchebags.
Obviously.
God, Mike, how many... God, boys won't be always be boys, Mike.
Described by Rakowski as an agreeable and personable young woman, Bregvi was happy to oblige. That's good old Midwest hospitality, huh?
Fuck politeness.
Because of this...
They let Gacy and Dahmer run wild. Like, let's not forget.
That's fair. Know? Because of this, she was thrown through the passenger window when their car struck one of the I-beams of the downtown elevated structure. 3 days later, Mary's Polish and Czechoslovakian parents buried their daughter at Resurrection Cemetery. Since Mary was killed in downtown Chicago, probably at Lake Street and Wacker Drive, it is highly doubtful that this Mary was on her way home from any Southwest Side ballroom, and most definitely not on the road outside the legendary cemetery. This Mary, according to the records of the Satala Funeral Home from which Mary was buried, was a young factory worker who died in the ambulance on the way to Iroquois Hospital, then on North Wacker Drive. Old newspaper interviews with Satala suggest one obvious reason why Mary was pegged as the famous Phantom, despite having the, quote, wrong hair and style, the wrong clothes, and regardless of her dying in the wrong place. I mean, everything was wrong. I mean, obviously, then everything.
Yeah.
Nearly 50 years ago,
Jesus, Mike.
A caretaker at Resurrection phoned Satala and told them about a ghost that had been walking the cemetery grounds. In the caretaker's opinion, the ghost was Mary. According to Rakowski, Bregvi loved to dance, but she also had short, dark hair, a far cry from the flaxen fantasy described through the years by Mary's various escorts. In addition, the late John Satala undertaker, who prepared Bregby's body and once described Mary as a hell of a nice girl, remembered that the eternal attire was in fact an orchid-colored dress, not a white one.
So really, there's nothing to say that this was the right Mary.
No, so once they went a little bit deeper into the research and they found the friend, that's when they found out what really happened that night.
I'm telling you, this really should be a Netflix show because I'm buying into it and then right at last minute, nope, wasn't that. But stay tuned for the next theory that might be at those two episodes.
That's also not going to have anything
and
to do with it.
And not till episode 9 do you find out really what happened.
And go.
This next part is really interesting. Not necessarily just for who we're going to profile, but who did such heavy legwork to get there. So, far more compelling is the connection solidified through the rigorous research of Frank Energeskic of Summit, Illinois, which matches the legendary lady to a whole different entity. He went full bulletin board and strings, guys. Imagine the movies. In August 1994, Frank was mailed an article from his brother, which mentioned the Southwest Side's most famous phantom. Already familiar with the story, Frank became swiftly smitten with the tale, finding that several of his fellow parishioners at Summit St. Joseph Catholic Church had more than nodding acquaintances with the local legend. In assembling his impressive dossier on the elusive Mary, Frank accumulated many opinions on the Phantom's earthly identity. relying heavily on the recollection of his cousin, Mary Nagold, and the key memory of John Poljak Sr., a Soviet immigrant, retired Prudential insurance manager, and St. Joseph parishioner. Frank waded through a variety of first and second-hand accounts, newspapers, articles, burial records, and photographs. He was astounded by the prominence of the legend in local lore and fascinated by the ability of many individuals, including his own fellow parishioners, to place Mary in their own experience. Remember, good brother, when you were talking about this story, different names you've had? Keep that in the forefront.
It's in there. Hold it. Now it's in there.
One of these is Chester Jake Paulus, who turned out to be the younger brother of the now famous Jerry Paulus, who is supposed to have been Mary's first dance partner at Liberty Grove Hall and Ballroom in Brighton Park in 1936. That's right, Jerry from earlier on in our episode. According to Jake, Jerry had been a passenger in his friend's car when the pair took Mary home that night, and she disappeared en route to the address she had given as her home. Though he recites the story with ease, Jake himself has no comments on his brother's tale, refusing to express either credibility or disbelief. Claire and Mark Rudnicki, friends, neighbors, and former St. Joseph parishioners, told Frank that Resurrection Mary could be traced to the 1940s, when a young Polish girl crashed near Resurrection Cemetery at around 1:20 a.m. after she took the family car to visit her boyfriend in Willow Springs. According to this version of the story, the girl was buried in a term grave at Resurrection. So for any of you who don't know, because I didn't, term burials, or term graves, as they are sometimes called, are grave sites that are rented for 20 to 25 years. After that, the headstones can be removed and a grave sold on top of the older one. In this type of contract, a new headstone can be replaced.
See, I didn't know what it was called. I've heard of that. I just didn't know the specific term for it, actually.
And appropriately, Frank wonders why a couple that well off to own a car in the 1940s would need to bury their daughter in a term grave. Adding to this explanations is another parishioner, Ray Von Ort, who tells how he and his bride-to-be were the first witnesses at the scene of an accident on Archer in 1936, when a black Model A sedan collided with a wide-bed farm truck at 1:30 a.m. According to Von Ort, of the two couples in the car, only one person survived, a girl who was badly hurt. Both men and another girl perish. Today, Von Ort is convinced that this was the accident that killed our would-be Resurrection Mary. Still another parishioner claims that the wayward wraith was in life Mary Miskowski of the Southside Chicago neighborhood of Bridgeport.
Hey, it's where Alyssa lives.
Oh, shout out. Just don't leave your cards out there. In this narrative, Miskowski was killed crossing the street in late October in the 1930s. On her way to a Halloween party. After pondering the variety of accounts, combing earlier editions of local newspapers, and checking with funeral directors and cemetery managers, Frank came to believe that the ghost known as Resurrection Mary is the spiritual counterpart of the youngest of all the candidates, a 12-year-old girl named Anna Norcos. Born in Cicero, Illinois in 1914, Anna was given a name, Ona, Lithuanian for Ann. In that era, it was custom for Christian infants to have two names. Yeah. So that was a common thing in Europe. Does your mom have two names? Two names? I don't know.
She has a first name and a middle name.
I wonder if they consider that the same.
It might be. I mean, I know that my mom has, they all have middle names as far as I know. And I have two middle names.
Okay. But after 1918 is when it became custom for that. We're baptized with a Christian name and historic name to further pride on their main country.
That's so pretty kind cool. of like what you do nowadays, but less official, more just under God sort of thing. Than
well, it's probably law. Similar to what do you guys do? Communion.
Communion, where you choose your saints.
Yeah.
But it seems like back then that became like your official name was also blank, blank, blank. Instead of now, it's more just a symbol of sorts.
Right.
Yeah.
So as a young girl, Anna's devotion to the Blessed Mother led to her begin using a name. Miraja, Mary as her middle name. By the time she neared her teenage years, Anna had grown into a, quote, vivacious girl. And that's funny because they probably just meant that, like, her puberty kicked in faster than the other girls in her class in 1914. Like, they just had no idea, and they're using the word vivacious. Blonde and slim, she loved to dance. And it was her relentless begging that convinced her father, August Sr., to take her to the dance hall for her 13th birthday. On the evening of July 20th, 1927, father and daughter set out from their Chicago home at 5421 South Neva for the famous O'Henry Ballroom, accompanied by August's friend, William Wisner, and Wisner's date. On their drive home at approximately 1:30 a.m., the travelers passed Resurrection Cemetery via Archer Avenue, turning east on 71st Street, and then north on Harlem to 67th Street. There, the car careened and dropped into an unseen 25-foot deep railroad cut. Anna was killed instantly. After the accident, her father, August Norcus, was subject to devastating verbal abuse, even being told that Anna's death had been God's punishment for allowing the girl to go dancing at such a young age.
Because that's really what God's focused on. Right?
That's literally middle school dance.
I mean, no, if there's only World War One and World War II right around the corner, but I'm really sure God's focused on the girls dancing.
Yeah, but this is a time where, like, they're saying that to bring in that Christianity, they would have, you know, they had the names happening, like middle names and whatnot. So we can tell that in general, religion is very important. In a lot of religious circles, dancing is considered evil and it's considered something inappropriate. And so at the age of 12, that's probably why it's being brought up so much. It wouldn't be brought up now, but it, you know, back then.
I mean, media is still media. Like, anything juicy to bite onto is, you know, I just saw something on JonBenet Ramsey the other day, like just watching it with Brit. And it's so fascinating. Like, they talk about specifically, like, you know, this story is not as big if these pictures or video never come out.
Yeah, of course.
Like, this story really just kind of dies absolutely. In. It's, that's what made it a story. So kind of the old version of that is this, where the fact that she was such a young, pretty woman who was trying to dance, and that's why she died, they think so.
In reality, the blame rested with the Chicago Streets Department, who had failed to post warning signs at the site of the cut. In fact, another death, that of Adam Levinsky, occurred at the same site the night after Anna's demise. Between July 28th and September 29th, an inquest was held at Sabika's mortuary in adjacent Argo. Heading up the five sessions was Deputy Coroner Diedrich, the case reviewed by six jurors. The Des Plaines Valley News carried the story of the inquest. Mary Nagold described the sad precision that left the Norcos home on a certain Friday morning. First in line was Anna's older sister, Sophie, followed by her older brother, August Jr. The pastor, altar boys, and a four-piece brass band preceded the casket, borne on a flatbed wagon with pallbearers on each side. Relatives and friends followed the grim parade for three blocks to the door of St. Joseph's in Summit, where Anna had made her first communion only a year before. Between the band and the priest walked a terrified Mary Nagold, a friend of Anna's who had been pressed into service as a wreath bearer. On a summer vacation, Nagold was weeding on an asparagus farm in Willow Springs when she had a visitor. It was Gus Norcos, either Anna's father or brother, it's never really answered, asking her to participate in the funeral, since Mary had made her first communion with Anna and owned a white dress. Imagine that being the only reason somebody is asked to be part of your funeral is because you have a white dress. You just happen to have the right apparel. Like, that's kind of sad. I that one just kind of struck me a little bit. It's like, you when you guys had a communion together and you have the proper dress, like, that's just kind of sad. That's like not having friends or that would want to do it.
She was young.
Well, she was young, but it's also a lot of times, especially that area, from what I know, doesn't have a lot of, like, the median income has never been super high. So it could have been just also, like, circumstances that you have something that we can use for our daughter that we don't necessarily have the funds to have otherwise.
So going into a little bit about where we're speaking of the location. When Mary returned home that evening, her mother informed her that she had accepted the request on her behalf. The girl was deeply dismayed at the proposition. Mrs. Nagold reminded her daughter that refusal of such a request would be a sin against Roman Catholic moral living, which dictates that one must attend to the burial of the dead. Anna was scheduled for burial in one of three newly purchased family lots at St. Casimir Cemetery, and it is here where Frank found the if that may have led to an infamous afterlife for Anna as Resurrection Mary, or as Anna called herself, Marija. Frank discovered that at the time of Anna's death, a man named Al Chirusa Jr., brother-in-law to Mary Nagold, lived across the road from the gates of Resurrection Cemetery in a large brick bungalow that still stands today. Al's father oversaw the grave diggers and was given the house to live as part of his pay. In the mid-1920s, grave digging was hard manual labor, rewarded with low pay, so strikes were common. And as Resurrection was one of the main Chicago cemeteries, the elder Churras was often sent to cemeteries of striking grave diggers to secure the bodies of the unburied. Returning to Resurrection with a corpse in a wooden box, Churras' duty was to bury it temporarily until the strike ended and the body could be permanently entered into the proper lot. Because of poor coffin construction and lack of refrigeration, a body could not be kept long except in the ground. If the strike dragged on, identification at the time of relocation could be gruesomely difficult. Thus, reasons Frank, if the workers at St. Casimir were striking on that July morning in 1927, it is quite possible that young Anna was silently whisked to a temporary interment at Resurrection and that a rapid decomposition rendered her unidentifiable at the time of exhumation. The result? A mislit corpse and a most restless eternity, if you believe, and that sort of thing.
I mean, I think it's totally possible.
That's so sad, though. Like, you get to the end, it's like a ghost story. Like, that's, like, super real, and that's what makes it sad. It's like, yeah, that all kind of does add up evidence-wise. That wouldn't make the most sense.
And wait, there's more.
Oh,
because
wait, no. Did you Netflix us again?
If you have more reason, or if you need more reason to believe that there might be something going on, Frank muses, this time connecting otherworldly Anna to the sneering specter seen on the road outside of her alleged resting place. The elder August followed his youngest child to St. Casimir 30 years after her death, a broken man besieged by alcohol and blame to his grave for his daughter's demise.
That's so sad.
As Frank reasons, it wouldn't take much to make a ghost out of this ill-fated character. And yet, how much more is there, again, if anyone believes in ghosts, if Anna was mistakenly buried away from her family? Here, the stories merge very easily. The resulting image is classically and completely appealing. Resurrection Marija combing the southwest suburbs for her kin, and her father wandering outside her unknown destination, watching and waiting for his lost beloved. But there's a little bit of truth now in life, right? So these are the legends that these stories have been built on.
Right.
Despite widespread belief in such scenarios and the untiring work of devoted researchers like Frank, specialists in modern folktales have utterly disregarded local attempts to trace Resurrection Mary to any earthly counterpart. Instead, many scholars explain Mary as merely a localized version of the widespread vanishing hitchhiker legend.
Boom, throwback to Alex from very first sentence.
These legends have passed from generation to generation throughout history, but the 20th century versions always follow a strikingly similar pattern. A hitchhiker, usually a young woman, is either picked up along a dark road or met at a dance from where she is given a ride home. In the latter situation, her would-be suitor may report having danced with the young woman, finding her somewhat cold. That was just every high school dance for me. In both situations, she gives her escort vague directions to her house, but along the way, she suddenly vanishes from the car. Sometimes the driver will have procured her address and proceeds to the house to ask whether the girl has returned safely home. Upon his arrival, he is told that the girl, whom he recognizes in a photograph displayed in the home, was previously killed in a car accident on the road or near the dance where she met her unfortunate escort. The Resurrection Mary stories bear an uncanny resemblance to these widespread tales. In fact, accounts of Mary by eyewitnesses have confirmed to the universal model even, more perfectly than do most secondhand legends. However, the existence of so many firsthand reports raises questions about the assertions that Mary is merely an urban legend. And that is where we end our episode of Resurrection Mary.
I knew it. Called it from the beginning. Never doubted myself
that once. You weren't going to get the ending that you wanted.
Now, of course, humans can't help themselves but to make money in every situation. Just southwest of Chicago on Archer Avenue in Justice, Illinois, across the street from Resurrection Cemetery, is a bar called Chet's Melody Lounge. Chet's is a classic roadside tavern with a pool table, a jukebox, a popcorn machine, and a large clientele of bikers. But Chet's has an unusual tradition. Every Sunday, the staff leaves a Bloody Mary at the end of the bar for a ghost. Ghost name? Resurrection Mary.
But it's a Bloody Mary. Wouldn't it be funnier if they gave a Bloody Mary for Bloody Mary? Don't
think
Mary?
Too much as a biker bar. What did you think of today's episode, Lovely Nicole Mancha?
I think it's interesting. I mean, there's no real answer, right? So it's just kind of just guessing. And it could be someone completely different that they don't even know about. Because think about it. The media wasn't what it was today. Like, we don't find everything out every 3 seconds. So what if something else happened, you know?
Yeah, something totally might have happened. I think it's all made up because it's a cemetery and it's really creepy. And when you're driving down creepy. Long roads that don't have any lights or places, it's easy for your mind to trick you.
That's like every place in Illinois sometimes. I drive down dark, creepy roads all the time with no cemetery. Being like, it's pretty creepy.
So that'll do it for this episode of Murder, Mysteries, and More. Thank you all so much for making us a part of your day. Make sure you follow us all over social media. We're all on Twitter. I'm at Mike M Media. Good Brothers at Mercado21Alex. And the Lovely Nicole Mancha is at Type1Tipsy. We're all on Instagram. The Good Brothers at Mercado2121. Lovely Nicole Mancha is at Type1Tipsy. I'm at Mike Mercado Media. Follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves. Follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mysteries, and More. Subscribe to us, like, rate, review, wherever you get your favorite podcast at Mercado Airwaves. And, of course, visit us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. We have a bunch of new tiers just for you if you want to support the network and support these two nasty habits. For the Lovely Nicole Mancha.
Good night, everybody.
For the good brother himself, Alex Mercado.
Adios.
We'll see you on the next episode of Murder,
Mysteries,
and More
on the Mercado Airwaves Network.